97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The Mark Cox Morning Show is brought to you by Thomas Helbig and Bob Kershaw with the Retirement Advisory Group, retirementkey.com.
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I want to compliment your show on how fair and level-headed everything you guys talk about.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
Maybe what we need from a conservative standpoint is
the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I respect that. We don't agree.
Listen to both sides.
This,
let's get it on,
is the Mark Cox Morning Show.
All right. Good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Lots of stuff going on here. In a few minutes, we're going to get to former Senator Jim Towne, as we always do on a Thursday, anxious to get his thoughts on the outcome of the Missouri primary and what happens next. Already a hit piece out I saw this morning on one of the local stations on Denny Hoskins. We had the guy on the show, right? Secretary of State candidate who won the general the primary. Already done a hit piece on him because they're suddenly shocked that he has concerns about voting integrity and would like to go back to hand counting paper ballots.
And limiting absentee ballots, which I don't have a problem necessarily with absentee ballots, but I think, as you mentioned the other day, Mark, there has to be some system in place to verify it's actually that person.
Right.
Notarized or something and watched like a hawk as these are dropped off.
Key being limiting, right? I mean,
yes.
He's not talking about eliminating.
Limiting it. Controlling. Yes.
Making sure not just any excuse matters. Anyway, important stuff. We'll get Denny Hoskins back on here to talk more about this and why they're attacking him already for sure. And then we're going to talk about what impact, what threat there is, and how much worse it's going to get in education if we end up with a Kamala Harris administration. Because there are already indications of what she would allow and institute and allow to be instituted on college campuses across the country. So we're going to talk to a former member of the Trump administration. He was Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights in the Department of Education. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But first, I want to get to our top stories here. Carl, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
If we go to a civil war, remember, more deaths in the American Civil War than any other conflict since.
That was Kamala Harris's married boyfriend, Montel Williams, or ex-married boyfriend, Montel Williams, who cried on TV yesterday, concerned about the coming civil war in the United States.
Well, first of all, let me just say that President Trump noticed that when he was in office, we did not have the world on fire. We did not have a war in the Middle East and a war in Europe.
Yeah, J.D. Vance has been doing a fantastic job pointing out the contrast here between the Harris-Biden administration and what we can expect out of the Trump-Vance administration.
Stolen valor is really what it is. I don't know of anybody else that's done what he's done, but we call it the truth about Tim Walz.
Spread this story far and wide this morning on your social media. This governor out of Minnesota has been lying and campaigning on lies since he basically left the National Guard about being in combat and even what his title was when he was in the military.
St. Louis native and beloved rapper Nelly is facing charges after a run-in with Highway Patrol.
Troopers found four pills of ecstasy. He was also charged with driving without insurance.
Wow. Yeah, Nelly in a little bit of trouble. He has hired, it appears, the best defense attorney in town, Scott Rosenblum, who says that all of this has been blown out of proportion, and it was all because of an overzealous police officer. But it sounds to me like he was arrested while driving, didn't it? I mean, he was arrested for driving like on an expired license or with an outstanding warrant or something.
He didn't show up for like a prior traffic ticket.
Back
so
in
there was like a warrant. So there was like a warrant, or I guess, which is, I believe, why they pulled him over. And then once they pulled him over, they found the four ecstasy pills and that he had no car insurance.
At a quarter till five in the morning.
At the casino.
Well, I mean, I have no idea if Nelly's good for that or not. Remember, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the Ferguson riots this weekend. Saturday, we'll mark it. I'm sure there will be, you know, protests and whatever in Ferguson. There's Channel 4 is doing a big piece on it. There's a movie coming out. CBS is doing an hour-long documentary on 13 days in Ferguson or something like that. You're going to hear all the same old hands up, don't shoot lies. I'm sure they'll trot out Mike Brown's family to lie about it again. But bear in mind that after that, they passed, I think it was Senate Bill 5, that was designed to keep municipalities from targeting people for just for the revenue. And it cut down on a lot of that. So as somebody who was actually a victim of that one time, I can tell you that it could be a problem if a city cited you for, you know, nuisance of the grass being too high at your property. And then they sent the citation to the piece of rental property and not to the owner. And the owner never saw it. And then the owner didn't show up for the court date. They would issue a summons for your arrest, right? Or you get pulled over for speeding or an expired tag. Police officer runs your record, sees that 3 years ago you received a summons for failure to appear in court on something you never knew existed. Maybe that's all this is for Nelly, right? And maybe he didn't realize there was a old traffic charge or something and he hadn't been in court. I'm giving the benefit of the doubt here. My bigger question is, what the hell is he doing driving?
My question is, why do you have ecstasy pills on you and you're out at 4:45 in the morning on a Wednesday?
All good questions. But why was he driving? He should have a driver.
He also should have car insurance like the rest of us.
Yes.
Sorry, but I don't feel bad for him at all.
Yeah.
I feel like so many of these celebrities weasel out of some of these situations because they have a ridiculous amount of money. They've got all the right connections. And you know what? If you're going to be that ridiculous and do that kind of stuff, you need to be held accountable for it.
Well, he is making headlines around the country this morning for the wrong reasons.
Well,
right?
It's definitely getting hot in here, or hot in her, I should say.
Oh, nice.
Technically.
Thank
you, Carl.
He's making headlines like Cori Bush this morning all over the country. People are looking at headlines and they're seeing St. Louis in the news twice. Once for Cori Bush's rant, once for Nelly's arrest.
St. Louis, we just look fantastic right now.
I'm just telling you, it's rough out there. Hey, coming up, we're going to get to Jim Talent. I would love his thoughts on what happened there in CD1, also CD3 for that matter, and the results of the election on Tuesday in the Republican and Democrat primaries. We will pick the brain of Jim Talent, the immense brain of Jim Talent, coming up here right after the break. Stay tuned.
It happens in my life that happens in vain. So this happened, it's because it was meant to happen. And let me say, it's because of the work that I need to do. And let me say this.
Former Missouri Senator Jim Talent joining us this morning. And Jim, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark.
Yep. Cori Bush making headlines around the country for more than just losing her congressional seat in the primary. A lot of people perceive what she said right there as not only anti-Semitic, but a direct threat to the people at the American-Israeli Political Action Committee.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to read it any other way, although I suppose if you want to be charitable, you can say she's saying, I'm going to get involved politically against them. Mark, I didn't expect her to leave the public stage with grace, and she didn't, right? So,
yeah.
And that was a pretty extraordinary, quote, concession, end quote, speech.
Well, and sad when you look at the breakdown of the vote. I mean, the mayor of St. Louis was at her concession speech. Everybody in the room was cheering. I confer that means the mayor of St. Louis supports her comments and her intentions. Now you look, she won the city of St. Louis. Despite losing CD1, most of those votes for Wesley Bell came from the county, apparently. So she won in the city. There were enough people here that support her that, I mean, I think that must be what Tashara Jones is banking on, that her constituents support these kind of antics out of Cori Bush.
Yeah, I don't know what the mayor is banking on. I do know that the mayor may have to answer some questions about, you know, what she said and how the mayor interprets it. Look, I mean, we saw this with the rejection of Josh Shapiro on the national level as a vice presidential campaign. Again, the inference is common sense and is available that, you know, concerns about anti-Israeli or anti-Jewish sentiment within the party was one of the reasons. And so, you know, we're seeing these signs, and it's something that the Democrats are going to have to deal with, just as the Labor Party in Britain had to deal with it when we saw the same thing, you know, when Jeremy Corbyn was the leader over there. So, you know, we'll see what happens if and when their candidate ever gives an interview.
You know, right? I saw a tweet from Josh Hawley that said that supposedly Kamala Harris had in fact chosen Josh Shapiro as her running mate, and that some of the other Democrats freaked out and didn't like that decision, so she ended up going with Tim Walz. Yep. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but you have to wonder. I mean, was he her second choice? Because to me, that was a very shocking decision on her part.
Yeah, again, there's evidence that this was a last-minute change, and if it was, we don't know why. Again, the inference is available that given the high visibility of issues related to Israel now, that it had something to do with that, because Shapiro's made plain his support for Israel. And again, at some point, unless they actually believe they can go the next 90 days without her giving an interview, somebody may ask that question. I mean, this is the problem they've got, and maybe it's just a short-term strategy to get through the convention. I guess it would make some sense then. But at some point, they're going to have to sit down for interviews and answer questions. We have this whole issue with Walz and his service and why he left it when he did. And we'll wait to see what happens. I think the Trump ticket's beginning to exploit this effectively with Vance, you know, drawing the contrast by going over and talking to the reporters who were supposed to be covering Harris, but they never ask her any questions.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good move.
Well, I know you remember the Swift boat controversy with John Kerry. Probably many people claim it damaged him enough that he had no chance of winning in 2004. I don't know if he ever had a chance anyway, but they're bringing up the same thing about Tim Walz now. I don't know if you've seen that today or not, that he misstated his official title when he was in the National Guard, and that he also claimed in his anti-gun rhetoric that he was in a war zone and held a weapon of war, and that is not true. So he's being outed sort of in a swift boat fashion now. Do you think that's effective?
Yeah, those sure, but it depends on how they handle it now, is what I would say, the effectiveness of it. And we're just talking politically now. I generally don't comment on the merits of these kinds of questions because I never served myself. I mean, this is sort of an intra-veteran thing,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But the issue is what happens, and I refer specifically to why he left when he left. Okay, eventually he's going to get asked. Now, at that point, if he says something that isn't true, there's a bunch of people who knew him at the time, served with him at the time, and for them, understandably so, this is a matter of honor rather than politics. I mean, veterans will never criticize, in my experience, people who don't serve or even people who duck service. But if you're claiming credit for your service, you better tell the truth about it.
Yeah.
And that's what caught up to Kerry. So it'll be the second round of this when it happens that I think will have the real political valence. Right now the questions are being raised, but what happens when he has to answer a question about it?
Yeah, that's a good point. Jim, I don't know if you, I got about 2 minutes left here. I don't know if you endorsed anyone in the Republican primary or not. Any thoughts on the outcome on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think we had good candidates, I think, pretty much across the board. We have a strong ticket. I've known Mike Keogh for many, many years. I was supporting him. And I think he's going to make a great governor. And we've got a lot to do in Missouri in the years ahead. And I think he's going to be a very effective leader in Jefferson City. I mean, he's in line with the party's priorities on policy, and I think he's very effective in dealing with the legislature. When you're the governor, that's really a key, right? And we've seen some legislative dysfunction in the last couple of years. You know, you're not gonna soft pedal it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and I think the whole ticket is strong, and I'm very hopeful of a big victory in November.
Jim, always great having you on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. I think he's right about the military thing. I mean, I think the criticism will continue to pour in from the veterans who are the ones most offended by this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the average American is going to be as passionate about it as, you know, the swift boat vets against Kerry were with John Kerry. But I think you'll see more and more of that come out in the weeks to come, particularly now that CNN is acknowledging
finally
what he told was a flat out lie.
But why tout it? Why tout it knowing this could likely come out?
Yeah, I don't
know. He's been bragging about it
for a long time. And the media ignored it up until now, oddly enough. Coming up, how much worse could the woke colleges get under a Kamala Harris administration? We'll talk about it. Something in the way she walks. Yeah, remember that? These are a lot of the protests that have been taking place on campuses around the country, all in favor of Palestinians and against Israel for the most part, very anti-Semitic in nature. You have to ask yourself, this with a wink and a nod was, you know, approved by the Biden-Harris administration. They did very little to stop it. And you got to wonder if there's a Harris administration, what happens then? We got to William Trackman with us this morning of the Mountain States Legal Foundation, and of course served as Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights at the Department of Education during the Trump administration. And William, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for giving us a few minutes this morning. You know, I've wondered, because particularly having served in that role, you understand the impact that even administrative decisions make when handed down from the Department of Education. What would you expect under a Harris administration?
Well, I would expect more of the same. So the Department of Education has a bunch of different internal divisions, one of which is the Office for Civil Rights. That's where I worked under President Trump and Betsy DeVos. And their mission is basically to say, we're not going to fund civil rights violations with federal dollars. So that includes financial aid dollars. It includes any sort of aid dollars related to, like, the subsidies or grants that universities get. And so OCR, the Civil Rights Office, is supposed to respond to accusations of race discrimination, sex discrimination, anti-Semitism, disability discrimination, and they've been woefully inadequate when it comes to anti-Semitism. They just got sued for abdicating their responsibility to stop this type of discrimination on college campuses. So I don't expect much of anything to change if Harris gets into office.
You know, one thing I think that would happen if they're elected is that Tim Walz would make sure there are tampons in every single one of the men's restrooms, because now he's being dubbed Tampon Tim.
Yeah, so Minnesota has a law saying that they're going to provide menstrual products to students, and there's no provision for not including them in the male bathroom. I could absolutely see under Title IX, which is the statute that guarantees no sex discrimination in K-12 or post-secondary college education, that they could say, hey, you have to provide tampons throughout all your bathrooms for both male and female and transgender students. Already they've included gender identity in the definition of sex discrimination, and the Title IX regulations that just went into effect last week. So this is definitely high up on their agenda.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that, because from a legal perspective, does Chevron change their ability to do that moving forward? Does it have any impact on it? Because didn't Chevron say that if Congress passes a law, in this case Title IX, that administrative agencies can't go in and dictate the specifics of it.
Yeah, well, we're doing the crash course in, you know, law school 101 here. The Chevron case from the 1980s said that when Congress passes a law, the agencies like the Department of Education are allowed to interpret that law. And when someone challenges their interpretation in court, the court has to defer to the agency's interpretation if it's reasonable. Of course, that got expanded and expanded into the point where agencies almost never lost their cases. That's different now. So the court just in the last few months overturned Chevron. So now we're back to courts not giving deference to agencies for those interpretations. That doesn't mean they can't still interpret them, argue them, you know, try to persuade courts with their interpretations. And every agency, including mine, regulates and issues interpretations. But here, at least, the Biden or the Harris administration wouldn't get deference when they go to court.
Right. And, but honestly, I know I remember this happening in the Obama administration. I assume it's happened in the Biden administration. They will effectively blackmail state university policy, state education where they can, with withholding federal funds if they don't follow their policies, correct?
That's right. So I mentioned a second ago how the idea of the OCR is that we're not going to subsidize civil rights violations. So in some cases, the civil rights violation might be very, you know, legitimate, like an anti-Semitism issue. But here we've seen the department use the hammer in its toolbox of Title IX to say we will deprive you of federal funds if you discriminate based on sex. And by sex, we mean gender identity, which means you need to have tampons in the bathroom. It means you need to have, you know, gender-neutral bathrooms for non-binary students. And so absolutely there is a threat associated with these federal funds that if you don't do what they say you have to do, you're going to lose them. That also, you know, by the way, applies in the race context. We saw the Obama administration threaten schools with losing federal funds if their discipline numbers were disproportionately of minority students. So if you had, you know, 30% minorities, but 60% of your suspensions were of minorities, you were facing federal investigation and the loss of funds, which of course had its own deleterious effects when schools tried to gerrymander their numbers to avoid federal investigation.
And I just wonder how many of the current cabinet members would keep their positions, right? Because if she were elected, she would be able to choose a whole, you know, anyone she really wanted, right? As long as it was that person was confirmed, like Miguel Cardona, right? Secretary of Education, you know, terrible job. I just wonder if those people would keep their positions because obviously that they were appointed under the Joe Biden administration.
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes these officials try to cash in and maybe go into lobbying shops on K Street in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Or maybe they want to go back to their home state, but there is absolute discretion. The president can ask for the resignations of his or her cabinet members. The Senate does have, as you point out, the right to confirm or not confirm appointees, but generally people get confirmed because the Senate defers to the presidential selections for the most part. Betsy DeVos was a 51-50 vote. But yes, that's absolutely right. Harris would be able to appoint even more loyal appointees in the Department of Education and other agencies.
William Trachman with us from the Mountain States Legal Foundation. You don't have to look far for Kamala Harris's record on a lot of these things, right? She was attorney general in California. She signed a memo there arguing that the use of race in college admissions was completely legitimate. Now, SCOTUS has since slapped her down, but I would imagine she would try to institute a lot of those same things on pronouns, and she'd probably push student loan bailouts and all of that if she's in power.
You're absolutely right. So I went back and looked at the brief that she filed. She actually filed two, but one was more recent in 2015 in the Supreme Court in an affirmative action case. And it is riddled with citations to critical race theory scholars, to folks who have won awards for talking about their obsession with race and how race matters a lot. She was a very aggressive proponent of college racial preferences for non-white students, and I absolutely think that she would try to find daylight between what the Supreme Court has already rejected.
remember that? These are a lot of the protests that have been taking place on campuses around the country, all in favor of Palestinians and against Israel for the most part, very anti-Semitic in nature. You have to ask yourself, this with a wink and a nod was, you know, approved by the Biden-Harris administration. They did very little to stop it. And you got to wonder if there's a Harris administration, what happens then? We got to William Trackman with us this morning of the Mountain States Legal Foundation, and of course served as Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights at the Department of Education during the Trump administration. And William, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for giving us a few minutes this morning. You know, I've wondered, because particularly having served in that role, you understand the impact that even administrative decisions make when handed down from the Department of Education. What would you expect under a Harris administration?
Well, I would expect more of the same. So the Department of Education has a bunch of different internal divisions, one of which is the Office for Civil Rights. That's where I worked under President Trump and Betsy DeVos. And their mission is basically to say, we're not going to fund civil rights violations with federal dollars. So that includes financial aid dollars, it includes any sort of aid dollars related to, like, the subsidies or grants that universities get. And so OCR, the Civil Rights Office, is supposed to respond to accusations of race discrimination, sex discrimination, anti-Semitism, disability discrimination, and they've been woefully inadequate when it comes to anti-Semitism. They just got sued for abdicating their responsibility to stop this type of discrimination on college campuses. So I don't expect much of anything to change if Harris gets into office.
You know, one thing I think that would happen if they're elected is that Tim Walz would make sure there are tampons in every single one of the men's restrooms, because now he's being dubbed Tampon Tim.
Yeah, so Minnesota has a law saying that they're going to provide menstrual products to students, and there's no provision for not including them in the male bathroom. I could absolutely see under Title IX, which is the statute that guarantees no sex discrimination in K-12 or post-secondary college education, that they could say, hey, you have to provide tampons throughout all your bathrooms for both male and female and transgender students. Already they've included gender identity in the definition of sex discrimination, and the Title IX regulations that just went into effect last week. So this is definitely high up on their agenda.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that, because from a legal perspective, does Chevron change their ability to do that moving forward? Does it have any impact on it? Because didn't Chevron say that if Congress passes a law, in this case Title IX, that administrative agencies can't go in and dictate the specifics of it?
Yeah, well, we're doing the crash course in, you know, Law School 101 here. The Chevron case from the 1980s said that when Congress passes a law, the agencies, like the Department of Education, are allowed to interpret that law. And when someone challenges their interpretation in court, the court has to defer to the agency's interpretation if it's reasonable. Of course, that got expanded into the point where agencies almost never lost their cases. That's different now. So the court just in the last few months overturned Chevron. So now we're back to courts not giving deference to agencies for those interpretations. That doesn't mean they can't still interpret them, argue them, you know, try to persuade courts with their interpretations. And every agency, including mine, regulates and issues interpretations. But here, at least, the Biden or the Harris administration wouldn't get deference when they go to court.
Right, right. But honestly, I know I remember this happening in the Obama administration. I assume it's happened in the Biden administration. They will effectively blackmail state university policy, state education where they can, with withholding federal funds if they don't follow their policies, correct?
That's right. So I mentioned a second ago how the idea of the OCR is that we're not going to subsidize civil rights violations. So in some cases, the civil rights violation might be very, you know, legitimate, like an anti-Semitism issue. But here we've seen the department use the hammer in its toolbox of Title IX to say, we will deprive you of federal funds if you discriminate based on sex. And by sex, we mean gender identity, which means you need to have tampons in the bathroom. It means you need to have gender-neutral bathrooms for non-binary students. And so absolutely there is a threat associated with these federal funds that if you don't do what they say you have to do, you're going to lose them. That also, you know, by the way, applies in the race context. We saw the Obama administration threaten schools with losing federal funds if their discipline numbers were disproportionately of minority students. So if you had 30% minorities, but 60% of your suspensions were of minorities, you were facing federal investigation and the loss of funds, which of course had its own deleterious effects when schools tried to gerrymander their numbers to avoid federal investigation.
And I just wonder how many of the current cabinet members would keep their positions, right? Because if she were elected, she would be able to choose a whole, you know, anyone she really wanted, right? As long as it was that person was confirmed, like Miguel Cardona, right? Secretary of Education. You know, terrible job. I just wonder if those people would keep their positions, because obviously that they were appointed under the Joe Biden administration.
Yeah, absolutely. So sometimes these officials try to cash in and maybe go into lobbying shops on K Street in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Or maybe they want to go back to their home state, but there is absolute discretion. The president can ask for the resignations of his or her cabinet members. The Senate does have, as you point out, the right to confirm or not confirm appointees, but generally people get confirmed because the Senate defers to the presidential selections. For the most part, Betsy DeVos was a 51-50 vote. But yes, that's absolutely right. Harris would be able to appoint even more loyal appointees in the Department of Education and other agencies.
William Trachman with us from the Mountain States Legal Foundation. You don't have to look far for Kamala Harris's record on a lot of these things, right? She was attorney general in California. She signed a memo there arguing that the use of race in college admissions was completely legitimate. Now, SCOTUS has since slapped her down, but I would imagine she would try to institute a lot of those same things on pronouns, and she'd probably push student loan bailouts and all of that if she's in power.
You're absolutely right. So I went back and looked at the brief that she filed. She actually filed two, but one was more recent, 2015. In the Supreme Court in an affirmative action case, and it is riddled with citations to critical race theory scholars, to folks who have won awards for talking about their obsession with race and how race matters a lot. She was a very aggressive proponent of college racial preferences for non-white students, and I absolutely think that she would try to find daylight between what the Supreme Court has already rejected and what she might be able to get away with possibly if she really tries hard in the Department of Education by saying, well, the Supreme Court didn't prohibit all racial considerations just by banning affirmative action.
Wow. Well, I appreciate the insight into that. William Trachman, thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. The Mountain States Legal Foundation, obviously they work in the education arena and policy, and they're concerned about people need to understand what could happen. As bad as it's been under Biden, it could get a lot worse under a Kamala Harris administration. He, she, they, it, forced.
Maybe it'll be a furry.
Anything could happen with that group. What are we talking about today on the Kim on a Whim?
Have you ever gone to a restaurant and just wondered to yourself, how fresh is this food? You know, I've had that thought, and now one YouTuber has gone to really great lengths to prove it is easy to trick people.
Oh, imagine that. Maybe your favorite restaurant's up to one of these tricks. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a minute.
Kim on a Whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Can I convince hundreds of real customers that my fake five-star ramen restaurant is legit?
Feed this to the chef.
Well, this is going to be even harder than you think, because I only have 7 days to do it, and all we're going to be serving them is instant ramen. But why? I once worked in a restaurant that marketed all their food as fresh. Turns out everything they actually served had been made the week before. So I'm gonna set up an entire restaurant and see if I can trick people into believing that my instant ramen is gourmet.
considering it's like...
And the answer to his question, overwhelmingly yes. It is apparently very easy to trick people into thinking, in this case, this guy was serving gourmet ramen, had a whole staff of waiters and waitresses who would go around to people and say, we don't have a menu, but instead the way we decide which ramen dish we're going to serve you is based on your aura.
A sucker is born every day.
People are like, maybe wow, this minute. Is fantastic. I need another bowl. Meanwhile, they're heating it up in the microwave for like, what, 90 seconds and poof, their and meal is ready.
There's no menu, right?
I know that everything I've seen, it was just like, oh yeah, based on your aura, we think this is the best ramen dish for you. So people were thinking they had all different dishes.
And in the back, based on their aura, they've got boxes of that
bags of those
dry noodles, and they're just
popping them in the microwave, I guess,
hydrating them and nuking them or boiling them, and then serving them and telling you it's a unique dish created just for you.
Yeah,
and people were paying $25, $30 for
that.
A bowl.
That's the confusing part. I know this guy was encouraging influencers to come, but I don't know if I don't think anyone was actually paying for the ramen is my understanding.
Could you sue somebody if you discovered that?
If you're not paying anything, then no.
No, I mean, but if you'd paid for it, like if you went to a restaurant and they told you that you were getting this unique dish, and that could happen anywhere, you find out later that it was reconstituted something from the back of the restaurant, could you sue them for it?
That's a good question.
False advertising, or I don't know.
I mean,
we'd have to hire Scott Rosenblum to find out.
We would have. You would probably win the case for us. That's actually a really good question. But I mean, to this guy's point, he said he used to work in a restaurant and he saw that they would sit there and say, oh, fresh this, fresh that. Actually, it had been made the week before. And at that point, you come on, it's a week old. Yeah, it's been frozen, but it's certainly not fresh. And I understand there are certain, I've never worked in the restaurant industry. And I'm sure there are things that are very difficult to make in a timely fashion. You're trying to crank out a lot of them very quickly. So there's certain right. things that probably make more sense to do that. But you probably need to be upfront about it and not sit there and dub it as like this gourmet, fresh, whatever.
So what were the reviews like? Like, did it give, was he getting like any 4-star reviews or 5-star reviews from all these influencers?
Well, here's
did
what,
he give
one,
what he wanted.
Here's what one person said. It tastes really nice and home cooked. The broth is really good. People waited hours, 4 hours, I think, was one of the, like, whenever someone was asked how long did you wait in line just to get into this restaurant.
Right.
Because the guy's like, oh yeah, I'm only going to open for
but
2 days a year. It's like a pop-up.
It was for free.
I think it was for free. He did this whole YouTube video on it that's a little bit longer, and I watched
like,
most of it.
It's like these people that do movie reviews. Like, I think some of them do it just because they get to see all the films for
Carl,
free,
is he talking free. About you?
No.
I pay for popcorn. That's where the movie theaters make their money.
That popcorn is like, what, $6?
It's delicious. It's
that's
good
why
popcorn.
I buy a yearly subscription. It's
yeah,
only $5.
Well, yeah, if you're going to go to the movies all the time, which
the
I don't
point.
Ever go.
Got good popcorn.
And yeah. beer.
Movie
and beer.
Prices are outrageous.
Crazy.
Yeah. They're crazy. Anyway, I just would be curious thinking about when you're going to the next restaurant. Like, how
what
often
did we
is
say the
know.
Name of the famous ramen restaurant is here in St. Louis?
On Yelp, the number two ramen restaurant in the country is in South St. Louis.
Then what's have it called, you, though?
Have you been there?
I have not. I've driven
and
by.
The next time you go, will you not wonder if that's something unique in your bowl or something you could buy at Schnucks?
Or Cup O' Noodles that's 99 cents at Walmart. Nudo House is really good, by the way. I think
I'm
they have
sure
a few locations.
I'm sure it
you
is.
You said you've never had ramen, right?
No, I've had ramen. I've just never been to a ramen restaurant.
Oh, that's okay. That's what I meant. Yeah,
I had my crazy roommate in college, Randy, basically ate it for 3 years. I mean, he was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
He could cook. He would get mad at Frank and I because we would cook spaghetti or something and not clean the bowl for weeks. And,
for weeks? You let it sit there?
Frank did. I didn't, of course.
Oh, okay.
But
he would get
mad because he needed that pot to cook his ramen in. And anyway, that's my experience.
Some guy, I think it was John, commented on Facebook that he used to make ramen in the coffee pot.
Yes, I saw that.
That's hilarious. I never thought of that. I still love a good bowl of ramen.
Let
like
the hot
the
water
cheap
drip
stuff.
Into it.
Menya Rui is the place on Hampton.
Okay.
Good Number luck. Two in the country for
not,
ramen.
Not suggesting that they're getting their ramen out of a box. I'm just saying it's an interesting concept.
Go see for us if they
it's
are.
Ramen. Yeah. Hey, coming up, we're going to check in with a on the evangelical Christian vote this year. How important is that going to be for Donald Trump? Are they going to turn out to vote? An interesting look at that coming up here at about 8:20. And our friend Griff Jenkins is up there in Washington, D.C., reporting on the Swift boat controversy with Tim Walz.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Maybe your favorite restaurant's up to one of these tricks. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a minute.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Can I convince hundreds of real customers that my fake five-star ramen restaurant is legit?
Feed this to the chef.
Well, this is going to be even harder than you think, because I only have 7 days to do it, and all we're going to be serving them is instant ramen. But why? I once worked in a restaurant that marketed all their food as fresh. Turns out everything they actually served had been made the week before. So I'm gonna set up an entire restaurant and see if I can trick people into believing that my instant ramen is gourmet.
And the answer to his question, overwhelmingly yes. It is apparently very easy to trick people into thinking, in this case, this guy was serving gourmet ramen, had a whole staff of waiters and waitresses who would go around to people and say, "We don't have a menu, but instead the way we decide which ramen dish we're going to serve you is based on your aura."
A sucker is born every day.
People are like, maybe wow, this minute is fantastic. I need another bowl. Meanwhile, they're heating it up in the microwave for like, what, 90 seconds and poof, their meal is ready.
There's no menu, right?
I know that everything I've seen, it was just like, oh yeah, based on your aura, we think this is the best ramen dish for you. So people were thinking they had all different dishes.
And in the back, based on their aura, they've got boxes of that
bags of those
dry noodles, and they're just
popping them in the microwave, I guess,
hydrating them and nuking them or boiling them, and then serving them and telling you it's a unique dish created just for you.
Yeah,
and people were paying $25, $30 for
that.
A bowl.
That's the confusing part. I know this guy was encouraging influencers to come, but I don't know if, I don't think anyone was actually paying for the ramen, is my understanding.
Could you sue somebody if you discovered that?
If you're not paying anything, then no.
But if you'd paid for it, like if you went to a restaurant and they told you that you were getting this unique dish, and that could happen anywhere, you find out later that it was reconstituted something from the back of the restaurant, could you sue them for it?
That's a good question.
False advertising, or I don't know.
I mean,
we'd have to hire Scott Rosenblum to find out.
You would probably win the case for us. That's actually a really good question. But I mean, to this guy's point, he said he used to work in a restaurant and he saw that they would sit there and say, "Oh, fresh this, fresh that." Actually, it had been made the week before, and at that point, you come on, it's a week old. Yeah, it's been frozen, but it's certainly not fresh. And I understand there are certain. I've never worked in the restaurant industry. And I'm sure there are things that are very difficult to make in a timely fashion. You're trying to crank out a lot of them very quickly. So there's certain things that probably make more sense to do that. But you probably need to be upfront about it and not sit there and dub it as like this gourmet, fresh, whatever.
So what were the reviews like? Like, did it give, was he getting like any 4-star reviews or 5-star reviews from all these influencers?
Well, here's
did
what,
he give
one,
what he wanted.
Here's what one person said. It tastes really nice and home cooked. The broth is really good. People waited hours, 4 hours, I think, was one of the, like, whenever someone was asked how long did you wait in line just to get into this restaurant?
Because
the guy's like, oh yeah, I'm only going to open for
but
2 days a year. It's like a pop-up.
It was for free.
I think it was for free. He did this whole YouTube video on it that's a little bit longer, I watched
like,
most of it.
It's like these people that do movie reviews. Like, I think some of them do it just because they get to see all the films for
Carl, free, is he talking free. About you?
No.
I pay for popcorn.
Not.
That's where the movie theaters make their money.
That popcorn is like, what, $6?
It's delicious. It's
good
popcorn.
I buy a yearly subscription.
It's
only $5.
Well, yeah, if you're going to go to the movies all the time, which
the
I don't
point,
ever go.
Got good popcorn.
And beer.
Movie
and beer.
Prices are outrageous.
Crazy.
Yeah. They're crazy. Anyway, I just would be curious thinking about when you're going to the next restaurant. Like, how
what
often
did we
is it?
Say the
know.
Name of the famous ramen restaurant is here in St. Louis?
On Yelp, the number two ramen restaurant in the country is in South St. Louis.
Then what's
have
it called,
you,
though?
Have you been there?
I have not. I've driven
and
by.
The next time you go, will you not wonder if that's something unique in your bowl or something you could buy at Schnucks?
Or Cup O' Noodles that's 99 cents at Walmart. Nudo House is really good, by the way. I think they have a few locations.
I'm sure it is.
You said you've never had ramen, right?
No, no, I've had ramen. I've just never been to a ramen restaurant.
Oh, that's okay. That's what I meant. Yeah.
I had my crazy roommate in college, Randy, basically ate it for 3 years. I mean, he was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
He could cook. He would get mad at Frank and I because we would cook spaghetti or something and not clean the bowl for weeks. And
for weeks? You let it sit there?
Frank did. I didn't, of course.
Oh, okay.
But he would get mad because he needed that pot to cook his ramen in. And anyway, that's my experience.
Some guy, I think it was John, commented on Facebook that he used to make ramen in the coffee pot.
Yes, I saw that.
That's hilarious. I never thought of that. I still love a good bowl of ramen.
Let
like
the hot water
cheap
drip
stuff.
Into it.
Menya Rui is the place on Hampton.
Okay.
Good Number luck. Two in the country for
not,
ramen.
Not suggesting that they're getting their ramen out of a box. I'm just saying it's an interesting concept.
Go see for us if they
it's
are.
Ramen. Yeah. Hey, coming up, we're going to check in with on the evangelical Christian vote this year. How important is that going to be for Donald Trump? Are they going to turn out to vote? An interesting look at that coming up here at about 8:20. And our friend Griff Jenkins is up there in Washington, D.C., reporting on the Swift Boat controversy with Tim Walz.
Get more at 971talk.com.